Hello, welcome back to the Trekway. I am Trev, he is Gray. We is back for a special. We haven't done that too often just because we've had so much on. Well, I need to remember as well. You always got to pause the uploads, Trev, because otherwise we'll be a blurry mess and no one wants that. We don't want a blurry mess. So, yeah, we just literally, you guys will be aware of this. Last week they brought out the special, the short from the Roddenberry Archives called 765874 Unification. About 8 minutes long, if you don't include the credits. And essentially, before we give our opinions on it, I guess, really quickly, Greg, we'll kind of briefly run over it. And because they don't talk in it, some things are left open to interpretation. Which is not a bad thing. That's fine. Essentially, because we're celebrating the 30th anniversary of Star Trek Generations, which I have to add is not a bad a movie as people say it is. I do like it. I just don't like the way they killed off Shatner. I'm a fan of it. So they decided to do something special to remember it, to give some kind of closure, to give some kind of remembrance to a couple of key people in Star Trek, and essentially it is, you pick up from Viridian 3, I think it's Viridian 3, where Captain Kirk has basically died, Spock's kind of standing over him, and then the next thing you see Captain, or to be Admiral at that stage, I was Admiral when he died, actually, to be fair. He went up and down the ranks so many times, getting into trouble, getting promoted, that you lose count. And basically, you see kind of Captain Kirk, Admiral Kirk, about the age, he's 60s, from when he filmed, when they done Star Trek Generations, walking through the grass. He's greeted by a lot of people. Who are you? Who are the folks you said were standing there again, Gray, that you could recall?
The Vulcan woman that he came up to was Robin Curtis. She played Lieutenant Savick.
Yeah,
Star Trek 3 and 4. Star Trek 2 was Kirstie Alley.
She didn't want to come back,
and she did not want to come back, and they needed to find somebody.
Or lost,
right? And Robin Curtis actually did a good job. She was probably more involved in 3 than 4, but she was an important character, so I didn't even think we'd ever see her again. And here she is, popped up, you know, in an older age, of course. And I was just like, whoa, I was sitting there. So then the guy standing behind her, I'm still not 100% sure of the story about that, but they call him Sorak, not Surak, and not Sarek, which is Spock's father.
It's kind of confusing.
But Sorak, and there is some different things online that talk about him, but I don't know if any of them are really clear. One thing that was kind of cool about these, they've been doing these little videos, I guess four now, over the course of the years, is that they always kind of keep you thinking a little bit. They give you stuff that you want to see, and then they kind of, like, you know, don't say anything just to see what you might come up with. So there's probably more story behind the guy, but I know they didn't want. I know they didn't want to make a long film, and overall, it's absolutely fantastic. But you always, when you see something that good, and that moves you so much, you just want to see more. So when he was meeting Savick and the Sorak guy, I'm sitting there going, "Who else is he going to meet?" So I'm thinking he's going to bump into Scotty or Sulu or other people or whatever. It was only a couple more.
He was greeted by some of those Vulcans that we just mentioned there. And then he's given his old comm badge by someone from Star Trek The Next Generation era, which we see in Star Trek Discovery. I recognized him. We see him in Star Trek Discovery, if you remember, the exact same guy. He's one of the I think it's open to interpretation, might be a reminder. There's no dialogue in it. He's one of the guys that basically could travel through time, the Starfleet cops, if you like, the time cops.
Right.
So he goes through time and he hands over this to Admiral Kirk, because it's that's a piece of him, to be honest here. And then you see him go into, as I was joking to Gray, it was something out of like Destiny 2, the video game or something. It was this like dark corridor of light at the end. And he sees himself as a younger man and as an even older man than he is. Like all three of them, he looks down at the reflection of the water, sees a young Kirk as well. And there's, again, no dialogue. It's done perfectly just with facial expressions, okay, emotion, and it's beautifully done. And then at this stage, just give him an idea of what he was before and what he would be later on. And it's basically a passageway from where he was before to where he's going, which at the end of the tunnel, he goes into the light, so to speak, and he sees his old pal Spock there. Now, this is the Spock that that travelled across to the Kelvinverse to try and save the day. And they're on New Vulcan. And basically, he just walks up to Spock, and Spock's happy to see him. As much emotion as a half Vulcan's allowed to actually show. Right. Again, no dialogue. Kirk just goes up and holds his hand, and just it's really, really sweet. The original prop sitting on the table beside Spock, which is the picture. That's a picture inside of his original crew from the movies, which is really sweet. You don't see that in this, but if you go and investigate the prop, that's what it is.
Tech fans know what it is. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the most important. It's done for the fans. And also, I joked with, not that you can joke much during something like this, I joked with Gray that beside the prop was a glass of water on a table that's too far away from a dying man's bloody bed. You didn't stick that one through, guys. Come on. I jest. It's a small thing, but you know.
Depth perception.
Exactly. Yeah. Depth of field. Someone needs to turn the depth of field option in the PC settings. That's all that is, mate. We also do a gaming podcast as well, so we talk about things like that. And they've got a great view. Like, for a dying man, Spock has got he must have a penthouse suite or something, man. He must have been earning some cash in the future, because that is a stunning view over New Vulcan. And it's weird. It looks similar to Vulcan. So they picked a new home pretty well when they moved across. And of course, the two of them just look at each other for a bit, like good pals, best of pals, and then they look out to the sunset, and it's beautiful, and it just ends. It says, "For Leonard Nimoy," and it's absolutely beautiful. Now, to give you a little kind of the reason they've done this, there's several reasons they've done it. They wanted to mark the anniversary of Generations, the movie, Grey, of course. Mm-hmm. They wanted to do it in all its digital glory goodness, so it was done entirely in digital cinema, 4K, HDR, and spatial video. That's why when you see, I don't have it on me, when you see the iPhones these days with three cameras, you turn it on its side, you can take a spatial video, which means the video or a picture can almost be like 3D in a kind of way, and it's designed for the Apple Vision Pro, that VR headset that literally needs both your kidney soul to afford to buy it. And they wanted to, mark of respect, they wanted to honour Shatner and his role. They wanted to honour Nimoy. So Shatner is executive producer in this, but he wasn't in it. We have to be clear, he wasn't in it. He was just an executive producer. It was done with Susan Bain Nimoy, the late widow of Leonard Nimoy. She was an executive producer as well, and it was done with her goodwill and blessing. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't think of two better people to do it. Now, what they've done is they literally took, they've done what they've done with Tony Stark in Avengers. They've done that kind of de-aging stuff that we've started seeing back then. And they've got a couple of actors in to take the roles and done the CG at the de-aging on top of them. We had Sam Witwer as James T. Kirk and Lawrence Selig as Spock. Again, no dialogue, and they reproduced some of the backgrounds and scenes and stuff that they've had from the past. So they got the full blessing and the licensing, more importantly, from Paramount. I mean, they were never going to say no to that. I mean, you'd be really nasty.
A huge bad press if they had done that.
Yeah. So they're not doing this to make money. In fact, let me check here, actually. See, it's an unlisted video. It's a company called Utoy on YouTube, and it's unlisted, so they're not doing this to make money. right? That's really important to mention. That part of the reason Paramount probably said yes. You're not trying to make money from it. Well, no, you will honour it, the legacy. So go ahead and do it. So basically, Gray, your thoughts, my man. I know that was a long one for me, but your thoughts, and we'll break it down.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, obviously I'm an older guy, so I grew up as a kid with TOS. And so TOS always meant a lot to me, and I probably have seen every episode at least 3 to 5 times. And I even remember the thrill one time when I was younger where I actually missed an episode, although I didn't think I did. And I was watching the reruns one day, and all of a sudden one came on, and I just went, holy crap. I said, I never saw this one. And the thrill was just, it's indescribable. And that's the kind of, the reason I'm relating the story is that's the kind of emotion that always struck with me. When they came back in the movies, the very first motion picture, I went bananas. And I went bananas for every movie after that up to 6. So it just meant a lot to me. So it was so, for me to watch this, I just was like, my jaw was dropped and I'm like watching, you know, and getting very teary-eyed and emotional towards the end and stuff. So overall, I don't see, it was, if it wasn't perfection, it was also, it was awfully close to perfection. But it was just perfect. It was just, everything about it was perfect. And as a side note, it also just makes me a little, I'm not going to say angry, but the fact that this is the kind of Star Trek that everybody wants to see, that kind of quality, that kind of dedication, that kind of effort, that kind of emotional quality, and et cetera, et cetera. And the amazing thing is when this debuted, I mean, everybody on the freaking internet was talking about it. There's people that were doing videos like we are right now that they didn't even talk about Star Trek on their own programs, and all of a sudden they just had to talk about it. So you had people from all walks of life across the board doing videos on this thing, on this piece.
Yeah.
The other thing I really liked, there's many things I liked about it, but when he came to Spock and appeared in front of him, first thing is Spock looked at him, and you could tell, in because we know Spock so well, that Spock was happy to see him, obviously, but right at that point too, he goes and raises the eyebrow, which is perfect because that's exactly what Spock does when he's interested in something or he's fascinated about something. So even on his deathbed, he was fascinated that somehow Kirk was there, you know, at the end.
Right.
The other thing I thought was very cool was I was not expecting at all to see Gary Mitchell at the beginning of the episode. And when I saw him, I just went, whoa, because Gary Mitchell was on the what they call the second pilot and or the first episode of...
Should we break that down, Gray, and give our theory as to what we think, what happened there?
Yeah,
I mean, think Gary Mitchell, he's one of the Traveler guys that Wes...
No, he's way beyond that.
Gary Mitchell, that's what you said to me before when we were actually talking.
Yeah. But it goes farther than that. He was in the second. Wait, this gets confusing. But there was two pilots for Star Trek. First was the Cage. Shatner wasn't involved or anything, even though Nimoy was in it. And the executives at NBC then said, well, "It's pretty good, but I don't know." And so, in a rare move, which is really rare even today, they did a second pilot. Took some of the network suggestions. Shatner got involved at that point. And then they finally said, okay, now we're talking, we'll let you do it. So essentially the second pilot with Shatner became season 1, episode 1 of TOS. So anyway, his good friend, Gary Mitchell, and Gary Mitchell's girlfriend or whatever, were aboard the ship, and they passed through a gaseous cloud entity or an energy thing, whatever, which they'd never seen before, but they didn't really think it was going to be a problem, you know, going through it. It didn't sound like anything was going to happen to the ship, so they just kind of went through it. But apparently it affected these two because they have some type of Esper or ESP type power latent within them. And so this cloud or whatever tapped into that, and eventually these two become godlike beings. So they're beyond the Traveler in the sense that Gary Mitchell essentially has like all the powers of a god and or the god or whatever you want to call it, to where he can actually just, you know, put things together, make things, create life, kill life, whatever.
Yeah.
So my take is, and I don't think I'm far off of this one, is since you see Gary at the beginning, and you see Gary with the glowing eyes, and by the way, the actor Gary Lockwood was brought back, and that was him doing the motions, and they just basically, you know, rotoscoped or whatever over him.
Age must he be now, man? Wow.
Yeah, no, he's up there in age. Not as old as Shatner, but he's old. So I always thought that was great. So they brought him in, he did the bit, and then they just, you know, did the de-aging, blah, blah, blah. And it was the same character. I mean, right down to the quality in this video is great. I mean, I could not believe how good they got the looks of Shatner through the years, or Kirk through the years, Gary Mitchell.
That's how good this technology is now, mate. It's amazing. When I saw it on, the Avengers, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's come a long way, and it's done some really great things.
Is that a conversation about how maybe people can still use AI and CGI of actors that are still alive with their permission if they're maybe too old or from the estate to honor people that have passed away? Is that the right way to do it, maybe?
I think so. I mean, eventually, it may not happen for a few years or a decade or whatever. They're going to go back to whether it be people from Star Trek or the Marilyn Monroe estate or the Elvis estate or Frank Sinatra, whatever.
Yeah.
And they're going to produce films like this, or shorts at least, of people, you know, doing their thing and honoring them and doing something new. And you'll see it. It'll eventually happen, which will be interesting. But in any case, my feeling is that Gary Mitchell is the one that actually created all that happened in this clip. Because you can see his face. He's somewhere in space. Now, first thing people are going to say is like, well, wait, Gary Mitchell died because that big rock fell on him, you know, and where no one has gone before. But I always questioned, even when I was a kid and I was watching it, this guy had godlike powers and he was distracted for a second and he was slightly weakened from his girlfriend that had a better mind for all this. And then the rock falls on him. You know, I guess it was possible that maybe he could be dead because he wasn't paying attention. But I always thought...
Jesus died and he came back, so.
Yep. But I just felt like this can't be the real ending, I mean. But then I just kind of like forgot it and we went on with Star Trek.
And the lady after as well, remember the young woman as well? I think she's part of setting this up as well. Was that Gary's?
No, this girl was the one from the cage. It was the yeoman or whatever.
Yeah.
She was like the first focal point or the connection to the cage, which then went forward. Now, apparently, from what I'm hearing on the internet, she is a traveler, same as Wes is a traveler.
That makes sense. Yeah,
same as the dude, I forget what they call him, the alien.
She wanted to experience all of him. She maybe traveled to actually experience this event.
But just to show where the power levels are, okay, Mitchell's above all them, but he's also transcended the fact of being like, you know, somebody who wants to like hurt people into just, you know, wandering around and helping or creating things or whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
But he apparently still retained enough of his humanity, I guess you would call it, that he sensed that, you know, there was an unfinished business per se between Kirk and Spock.
Yeah.
And so he precipitated the whole easing of Kirk at death through this whole thing, and in the end actually meeting his friend and doing the right thing at the end. And that's why I pretty much perceive it, and I think that's what most people do.
To add on to that, and I agree with you as well, it helps if you have a god on site to set this up. He is basically facilitating Gary Mitchell the ability for Kirk to go from the prime universe into the Kelvin universe to see his friend in purgatory, afterlife, whatever you want to call it. The only thing that sucks about that is, of course, the way they killed Shatner was, Kirkhoff was awful. It was just, him dying for the right reason, I don't have a problem with. But not, like, and also, I mean, they've also kind of done this with Picard as well. Killed him off and brought him back as the robot. I mean, if you have to kill off a character like that.
Wait, we're just talking about something good, not something that bad.
You have to literally hire a shit up writer to do this, and they have the ruined two of the most famous captains of all of Star Trek doing this. So stop killing captains unless you can actually do it well.
Yep.
So he while he died kind of really shit in a kind of awful way, he's then going from one kind of universe to another. Poor Shatner, not only is he dead, or Kirk, should I say, he's not only dead, but he's now stuck in the shitty Kelvin universe. What a guy. He's went to hell. Why did you do that? Oh my God.
I mean, I basically look at it this way. The other reason I think they did it for multiple reasons, and they're all good. And so they were actually able to what would be the right word, to be able to wrap things up for all fans. One of the things that that both you and I and many people in Trek said is that the way that Captain Kirk died was not good. And this was, I think, a redemption for that, because they can't go back and say, like, well, we're going to screw canon and say that never happened. So instead of saying it never happened, they just took it from that point and they made this vignette, and this thing really did make it feel like, okay, even though he died not the way we would want, what actually happened afterward makes all the difference in the world. And so I think they did that to solve that particular, or to deal with that particular issue, which is good. I also think they dealt with the Kelvin universe in such a way too, because you can't deny that Spock, our Spock, Prime Spock, went to the Kelvin universe. So the only one that was really Prime in that whole universe was Spock. Nobody else was. So in order to get to Prime Spock, who obviously dies in the Kelvin universe because he sent himself there, you had to get Kirk to there. So,
well, he didn't send himself there. He was kind of,
well, Mitchell pulled
in, didn't he? He pulled in by, yeah.
Yeah, so the idea was that how are you going to get to the friend? Well, you got to get to the friend, to the Kelvin universe. Now, if they had not done that, then many people would have said, look, much as we might not like the Kelvin universe, you just screwed canon again, because the real Prime Spock went there. So they were able to keep that canon and simply just said, okay, so he did go there and he lived out his life and died. And so now they brought the two universes together in one moment, and one moment only, so that the two could actually meet finally at the end, like they both wanted to, if it was possible. Yeah. But it wasn't possible until Gary Mitchell made it possible. So that was another thing that was, I think, kind of, you know, wrapped up the loose ends and stuff. So it did many different things for fans. Brought back the old feeling of Star Trek, I mean, completely and utterly back to, like, to where we all loved it. It had the emotion that we're used to. It had the loose ends that were tied up and done correctly. I mean, it was so successful on so many levels. And when you watch other people doing the videos like we're doing, there is not a single one out there that had anything bad to say about it, period. I mean, none. Yeah, and if it was, it was just little minor things like we're bringing up. Otherwise, they're just like, wow, that was great. So I'm kind of curious from this point on, what is Otoy going to do next year, the Roddenberry Archives going to do next year? Because they seem to put one out every year.
I hadn't seen any others before, to be fair. I really struggle with, like, fan edits, and I know this is not a fan edit, it's like a proper license thing. I struggle with, like, things that are not actual proper Trek. But then after I saw this, I'm like, okay, it's got to be official, because I'm always like that. But no, despite people were saying they should have maybe, that would have killed for one or two lines of dialogue. You got one line of dialogue. Yes, it was reused, but still, it was perfect the way it was, to be fair. They didn't have to do anything else. They bridged it nicely together, and they done a great job. So Otoy, O-T-O-Y, if you look for them on YouTube, they work closely with the Roddenberry Estate, who in turn work closely with Paramount. Now, it was actually Paramount Game Studio. I didn't know that was a thing, but there you have it. Yeah. And they'd done a great, great job. The technology used to make this, they literally filmed it. I was reading about this before, Greg. They filmed it white because it's spatial for the Apple Vision Pro, they have to make it just right. I'm not going to buy an Apple Vision Pro. I value my organs. But let's say Gray says that they've done one each year for the last few years. They'll continue doing more. Whatever they do, it has to be done in a classy way. Mm-hmm. They've done a cracking job. They've paid homage to a brilliant person, a brilliant man, and character in Nimoy and Spock. And Shatner, I'm kind of surprised he didn't actually act it out and get de-aged himself. But either way, it's still the same character there, so I don't really mind too much.
The thing I thought was pretty interesting was, even though there was some de-aging and some CG, you know, work in this whole thing, or AI work in it, they still use prosthetics. So when Sam Witwer, who played Kirk, they actually put prosthetics on his face to make him look as close as they could to Kirk before they did any artificial intelligence work on him.
Well done.
And they did the same with Selleck, although Lawrence Selleck looks a lot like Spock anyway, or Nimoy. So less to be done there, right? But in any case, so I think that was a really smart move, because that way they could actually get the best of both sides, the makeup.
You know, done properly. Best of both worlds. I was going to say, two really good episodes of Trek.
It lightens the load on the AI, because the AI now can go in and start really working on the things that need to get worked on, not the whole, you know. So it was easier for the AI in a way to make it work. But,
Would you think they used, Greg? Do you think they used an RTX 5090? Maybe.
Yeah, a lot better than that one.
Sorry, we're doing it. We're doing, again, gaming podcast stuff. We run that as well, so there's always hardware stuff in there.
I was like, after I watched it like 2, 3, 4 times, I started going back on the last time to really look. And wow, it was hard for me to find any flaws, and I would have to really super nitpick. And if you want to hear one of them, I'll tell you. But it, otherwise, it was just like spot on, especially when they showed Shatner when he first started the series at his youngest. You know, Kirk at his youngest, and you saw him. I'm looking, I'm going, like, damn, that's good.
Like, yeah, it's amazing what they'll do. It's and it helps to have Leonard's partner and Shatner there himself. Listen, go to the Roddenberry Archive website, go to Otoy on YouTube and check them out. If you go to the Roddenberry Archive, wow, it's fascinating. There's behind the scenes pictures, videos, interviews with everyone. It's amazing what they managed to do to recreate all this. And
you can go on the bridges of a lot of the ships and kind of move around a little bit. It's kind of cool. Kind of a lot of things over there.
Yeah. A little shout has to go to the Emmy Award winning visual effects supervisor, Mark Spatney. He's part of Otoy's international team of artists and animators. And without people like him, you wouldn't get something of this quality. It was also directed by the award-winning Spanish filmmaker Carlos Baena. Sorry if I pronounced that wrong. And the story was by Jules Urbach. So you've got plenty of people in there to bring this to light. Mm. They've done a cracking job. I look forward to the next one. We'll kind of wrap it up there, and we'll be back for Lower Decks in a couple of days' time. We just wanted to come on to do this. There will be more specials and stuff on Trek. We've got a lot on our plates at the moment in our lives. But, you know, Star Trek remains the one thing that we love quite a lot, so it won't ever go away. Gray, thank you for jumping on with me. We'll get this out as soon as possible. Until the next time, say goodbye to the people, please, mate.
Long and prosper, everybody.
Nanu, nanu.
Boy.